Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
New research out of Macquarie University sheds light on just why our native blue tongue lizards have large coloured tongues and how that all works. You see, most lizards, it turns out, have small, boring old pink tongues. Who would have thought? I never thought to look. But blue tongues, my personal backyard favourite. Blue tongues are not your ordinary lizard, you see. Like many Australian native species, the blue tongue, the blue ear, is a bit quirky. I mean, you can just imagine when the Europeans first saw kangaroos with their boxing and hopping and pouches, and no wonder they thought platypus was a stitched-together hoax when a taxidermy sample was sent back to England. But what would they have made of the bluey? Australian animals have provided a lot of head scratchers like this over the years. They thought all swans were white until they got here and saw black swans, for goodness sake. So there it is. And you just got to keep asking the question why. It's the greatest question ever invented. Associate Professor Martin Whiting from the Department of Biological Sciences at Macquarie University is one of the researchers who's been investigating the intriguing blue tongues of my backyard favourites. Professor Whiting, welcome to Open House.
Thank you, Stephen.
So for those who've not experienced the full-blown rendition, can you give us an idea of what it would be like to be right up close, if you're a predator, to be right up close to a blue tongue in full attack mode?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little bit tricky to tell you exactly what they would experience for one simple reason, and that is that we can't see in the UV, whereas many predators like raptors and a lot of other birds and things like goannas and snakes that also eat blueys all have UV photoreceptors. And one of the things we discovered in this work is that the species we were working on has a UV reflective tongue, and humans can't actually see in the UV. We don't have the photoreceptor.
Yeah. Well, which just kind of adds a lot of interest to what's going on here, because when they do go into attack mode, I've seen this happen with my dog. We have a little dog, you know, she barks at the blue tongue lizard, which we hate because we love having blue tongue lizards in our backyard. So they open their mouth really wide, then their tongue comes out and sort of flattens down, doesn't it?
That's right. So basically, a predator is getting a blast of a highly conspicuous colour. So we were able to measure that UV, and the back of the tongue is much brighter than the front of the tongue. And we've also done what's called visual modelling, where we have information on the visual system of predatory birds, for example. And based on these colour measurements, we can look at how conspicuous it is to a predator. So we know it's a very conspicuous color, and it's basically what we call a dimetic display, and a dimetic display is a particular kind of anti-predator display, and it's all about overwhelming the senses of a would-be predator or would-be attacker. So they wait until the last moment, and then they open their mouths, and they have all this bravado that comes with that. So they're very good at bluffing, and they blow themselves up and hiss and do these little lunges. But basically, it's about giving a predator a blast of that very bright colour at the last moment.
So until your work, we thought that it was about the sound and fury, but we didn't know it was about this UV. So, and given that we can't see in the UV spectrum, but to a bird, for instance, how frightening is a blast of UV light, as you've described it?
Well, I think it all depends on the context. I mean, UV itself is really just like another colour to them. But in this case, it's a particularly bright, pure form of UV, and I guess an analogy might be if I walked up behind you and you didn't see me coming, and then I clapped my hands quite loudly behind your head, you would sort of be momentarily dazed and stunned, and you'd need a couple of moments to sort of collect yourself.
I need to have a cup of tea and a bit of a lie down if you do
that. That's right. I mean, I know that is a different sensory system, but it's kind of a good analogy, and that's the thing.
I didn't expect to see that there. The bird must go, what? What's UV light? What's that doing down there? That's a bit frightening.
Well, exactly. That's the theory behind it. It's enough to hopefully startle the predator. It's not going to work every single time. Obviously, we know that blueys get eaten.
Yes, I just imagine the big crow. That old thing. Who cares about
that's
that?
Right.
But Martin, right. You said that it was brighter at the back of the tongue. Now, this raises a question. Are they? They're not generating the UV light. They're not a light source, are they?
No. So UV is kind of interesting. It's what we call a structural color, as opposed to a color pigment. And we've also looked at the actual tongue itself. We were able to source some dead blue tongue skinks from a few vets. As you can imagine, these poor blueys have a hard time in suburbia, and they do get taken by dogs or run over. So we had a much closer look at the tongue using scanning electron microscopy, and we were able to look at the sort of ultrastructure of the tongue, and that's what generates that UV light. So UV is a short wavelength of light, and it's generated when light is reflected back off a particular structure. So a lot of birds have UV patches, which are just structural in a different way. So that's where UV is quite unique, for example.
It probably lets you then say how could we mimic that in a man-made structure if we wanted to generate UV light.
Absolutely.
Right?
So the whole story actually gets a lot more interesting, because the next phase of this work is to try and understand how the receiver or the predator, this blast of UV, and how it reacts to the UV. So this particular work was very much from the lizard's perspective, and now we want to focus on the bird's perspective. And it's been very challenging because we need to replicate that UV color. So we had to collaborate with a sort of nanostructure laboratory and replicate the structure that you see on the tongue of the lizard.
Yes.
And I had a postdoc working on this problem, and he was very dogged about it. And it took many months of experiments, but they eventually got it right. And we've subsequently built a robo-bluey. And the plan now is to have all these interchangeable tongues so we can color... We can have one tongue that is UV reflective and another tongue that is a regular pink tongue without any UV in it. And then we can sort of deploy this robotic bluey out in the wild. And
of course, it makes so much sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're gonna target kookaburras for the moment and test their response to this robo-bluey.
Oh, no.
The UV.
But here's a new, hashtag breaking in the Kookaburra Times, robo-blueys deployed. No, but that'll tell you a lot. Sorry, I don't mean to be funny, but that'll tell you a lot. But what do their robo-blueys look like?
So the actual mechanism is just a simple little motor. And, I mean, that's been pretty tricky to design and put together, and we basically hired an engineering student at Macquarie to work on this project, and then we obviously needed to look just like a bluey, so we were able to make some fake blueys that are cast from actual blueys, so they have all the same scales and color patterns and everything else.
Well, whoever said science wasn't going to be fun? No one ever said that, actually.
Absolutely. That's the reason we do it.
Yeah. I often ask researchers, where did the idea come from to go, I wonder if, what colour is a blue lizard's tongue?
Well, it all sort of stems from our research on animal behaviour and communication. We do quite a bit of work on colour signals and what those colour signals mean to animals. And, you know, it's an obvious question, because we know that animals typically have things like that for a reason. It's the product of evolution and natural selection. And we have measured blue colour patches in other species of lizards and quite often found UV associated with that blue. So we did suspect that there might be some UV in there. And, you know, nobody's ever tackled that question. They've been in blue tongues, that is.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, you know, this is a lizard that's an Australian icon.
Yeah.
People see them in their back gardens, and it's, you know, it's part of Australian culture and Australian natural heritage. So, yeah, we thought we should have a crack at this and figure out what's going on and try and settle that question once and for all.
So if I want my dog to stop chasing away the blue-tongued lizards, which are fantastic because they eat the snails, amongst other things.
That's right.
I just need to get my dog a pair of sunglasses. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's really tough. Dogs are really tough on blueies, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Especially terriers.
Well, yeah, thankfully we don't have a terrier, but our blue-tongued lizards have learned to hide in a particular drain.
They
can't be accessed by the dog. They're very smart animals, yeah. I wouldn't want to meet
absolutely
one on a dark night. Martin, thank you so much for speaking with us. It's been fun and really interesting.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on your show, Stephen.
Martin Whiting is an associate professor from the Department of Biological Sciences at Macquarie University. They make a heck of a noise, those blue-tongued lizards when they're arcing up. Oh, I should have asked Martin what they can do about the noise. I wonder if they've got little onboard speakers, the robotic blue tongues. If they're trying to fool the kookaburras, and they're doing this double-blind experiment, oh, pardon the pun, with the pink tongues and the blue tongues, they've got to have the noise, though. See, that's the thing. Well, there are always more questions than there are answers in the world. That's why I love being doing what I do. thank you, Martin.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.